Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Lydia Johnson. Our guest this week is Congressman Tracy Mann, who represents the Big First District in Kansas. He joins us to talk about the Farm Bill's future, CRP rental rates, and water shortages across the plains. But first, here's this week's headlines. The USDA will provide disaster aid to dairies with lost milk production due to avian flu outbreaks. The Agriculture Department will compensate dairy farmers for 90% of the value of milk production lost due to the H5N1 virus through use of its Emergency Assistance for Livestock, Honeybees, and Farm-Raised Fish Program, or ELAP. At this point, USDA is not providing compensation for dairy cows culled because of the virus. Members of the House Agriculture Committee met in a closed-door meeting this week to discuss the use of child labor in meatpacking plants. Organized by Representative Greg Kassar, the meeting addressed a failed amendment in the House Farm Bill that would have pushed USDA to end contracts with meatpacking facilities that engage in serious, repeated, or pervasive illegal child labor. Although the amendment was not included in the bill passed by the House Ag Committee, Chair Glenn Thompson promised to open discussions on the topic in the committee. After the meeting, Thompson said he is interested in potentially having a hearing on the topic. The Agriculture Department is requesting industry input and developing standards for crops that will be used as feedstocks for sustainable aviation fuel. The input will help USDA develop standards to quantify, verify, and accurately report climate smart practices happening on farms. The request says adopting standards differentiating crops grown with climate smart farming could incentivize further adoption of practices that reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Congressman Tracy Mann is a member of the House Ag Committee. Now that the Farm Bill has passed in a committee vote, we asked him about when it may be considered by the full House.
I hope as soon as possible. I've been very frustrated with the process. We've got to give our producers, not just in the First District of Kansas, but around the country, some certainty as our current Farm Bill expires September 30th. I was really pleased to see the bill that we're able to pass out of the House. It was a fiscally responsible, fiscally conservative Farm Bill that maximizes the return on taxpayer dollars in the bill. A lot of good things. A lot of my priorities were included, which I was pleased to see.
And one of the things that has been challenging is funding the Farm Bill. Funding the Farm Bill is still a big problem because the Congressional Budget Office says it isn't fully paid for. So Republicans could order CBO to provide the funding score we need, but Senator Chuck Grassley has said that could be a bad precedent moving forward. How do you deal with that issue in this time of deficits and rising federal debt?
Yeah, and that's why it's important that the bill that we did pass was a fiscally conservative bill. And to me, again, it's all about return on investment for taxpayer dollars. Let's make sure that the dollars we're spending, we're getting a really high return on investment. A great example of that is I've led the charge on trying to double dollars we're spending to increase trade, for instance, like MAP, Market Access Program, or FMD, Foreign Market Development. USDA tells us that for every $1 we spend there, we get $24 back. That's a great return on investment. We ought to do other things like that and make sure that the taxpayer is getting the biggest bang for the buck that they can in the bill.
We'll be right back with more from Representative Mann right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Representative Tracy Mann has been a firm supporter of using American-grown commodities in food aid programs. Although critics have said this reduces the number of people who can receive help from aid programs, he says it benefits American farmers, shippers, and consumers of products.
A fundamental part of our soft diplomacy is a program called Food for Peace. the concept, and it actually was grew out of Kansas, where a Kansas wheat farmer stood up at a Farm Bureau meeting and said, I've had a bumper crop, this is in the 50s, and I want to see some of my wheat go to feed hungry people around the world. That became Food for Peace that Ike signed into law a few years later. The concept being, let's send American-grown commodities overseas in bags to feed hungry people that need it. And that's not the entirety of our food aid, but certainly it ought to be a big part of it. And remember, when we do that, we are sending bags of food. It has a flag on that bag and it's stamped a free gift to the American people, which is great for the farmer, it's great for the shipper, great for the hungry people that receive that food, great for America's brand around the world, something we should do more of, which is why my bill makes sure that we are sending commodities, not just money, overseas.
Mm-hmm. And how do current food aid programs work? Is it where does it typically come from if it's not American-grown commodities?
Well, it just depends. And so I authored this legislation called American Farmer Feeds the World. And basically it ensures that at least 50% of the aid we're sending is in commodities, not just money. A problem we have when it's just money as well is that, you know, money can end up in other places. It's hard to trace. When it's commodities, one, we know it's American grown, it's good for the producer, and two, we actually know that food is getting to hungry people. And that goes all over the world. That goes to Africa, other countries. You know, ideally these programs are going to places and to people that aren't able to grow their own calories, which is why we got to send in food.
Senators Roger Marshall and Michael Bennett were at a field hearing in Colorado this week looking at CRP rental rates. Looking specifically at Kansas and your first district, do you feel that current CRP rates are too low for marginal lands?
They're low, and we've got to look at how do we make it reflective of the market and the times, which speaks to a bigger issue, and that is that input costs are up for producers all over Kansas, all over the country. And that's parts, that's labor. Fuel fluctuates, of course, but as we've seen input costs and the price of farming increase, that also affects the rent that CRP acres can or can't get, and that affects that market as well.
And what are your thoughts to changes to CRP rates proposed in the House Farm Bill?
So I agree with those changes, would like to see them increase more. We got to make sure that, and we also got to make sure that lands that are in that are marginal or that need to be in the program are in it, but also the lands that can be producing ag products need to not be in the program and need to make sure that our ag producers are grazing as many commodities as we possibly can to feed a hungry world.
And Kansas has experienced water shortages for years. Do you believe that federal action is needed to address the Ogallala aquifer depletion? And if so, what types of remedies would you like to see?
Yeah, absolutely not. This should, my big thing, and our family's farmed in western Kansas for 120 years. We have some center pivots that make use of the Ogallala aquifer. Anything in regards to water conservation needs to be a producer-driven, bottom-up approach. It should not be, and I would strongly oppose any federal action, any heavy-handed top-down approach. We need our farmers who are the original stewards of the water. It's in their interest to conserve water. We're using water much more efficiently today than we ever have. But let's make sure this is a producer-driven, bottom-up, and not a top-down approach.
And you mentioned, despite all the water shortage over recent years, your family's harvesting wheat right now. How's harvest going?
Yeah, you know, so my dad and brother farm full-time together. My dad, who's 73, harvested some of the best wheat he's ever had. He had a field that was, he sent me a picture of his field monitor showing 95, 98 bushel to an acre, which for us would be a record. Of course, the whole farm's not going to average that, but we are having a really good harvest on our family's farm. That's true for a lot of areas in Kansas. We have some areas that were hit by hail, had some other, some drought, some other things, which is why crop insurance, as we all know, is so important for ag producers.
And in your first district, wheat is one of your top crops. There's been discussion about including wheat as a cover crop, potentially. What are your thoughts on that?
That's why we do farm bills. That's why we listen to producers, stakeholders, to find out, is that what they want? Do our stakeholders want to see wheat be considered a cover crop? I would say this, you know, there are 435 districts in the country. My district's number one for wheat production, also number one for sorghum production, number one for beef production. So it's all about agriculture in the Big First of Kansas, and I'm proud to get to represent it.
Super well. Representative Mann, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Have a great rest of the day.
We'll be right back with our panel discussion. But first, our Jake Sikowski has more on what your 4th of July cookout will cost in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
As we approach the 4th of July holiday, economists are expecting a higher grocery bill for our cookouts. The American Farm Bureau Federation reports that this year's cookout will cost 5% more than last year. The annual cookout index covers a meal for 10 people, using 12 common foods, including ground beef, cheese, strawberries, potato salad, and pork chops. It estimates that this year's Independence Day grocery bill will total $71.22. This chart shows that since 2014, and the cost of that cookout has been rising. A decade ago, the cost of the same cookout was $58.72. The market remained relatively stable until reaching a decade low of $52.80 in 2019. However, after 2020, both 2022 and 2024 experienced significant spikes in food prices, influenced by factors like highly pathogenic avian influenza outbreaks and supply chain disruptions. Despite the overall increase, consumers can expect some savings. The price of chicken and potato salad both decreased by 4% compared to last year. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zukowski.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this farm bill coverage.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where this panel will focus on the current state of the Farm Bill. We're joined today by Katie Nasons from Tory Advisory Group and Joe Gilson from the American Farm Bureau Federation. Joe, we'll start with you today. The Farm Bill passed out of the House Ag Committee last month. What was your initial reaction seeing the bill, and how important was it to see four Democrats voting in favor?
Yeah, Chairman Thompson's bill was a good bill and support. It made the necessary investments in the farm safety net and conservation and research to really meet the needs of the moment. I think what it shows is a couple things. Chairman Thompson's team put in a lot of work to make this bill bipartisan. And then two, I think farmers and ranchers are really struggling with the price of inputs and just are letting their members of Congress know about that. And so that's why I think you saw the four Democrats come across the aisle to support it. What I think it means going forward is there is definitely an opportunity to put the bill on the House floor and garner bipartisan support and enough support to pass the bill out of the House.
And Katie, turning to you, you worked for Senator Stabenow for nearly a decade, and looking at the bill and what she's proposed so far, she has some pretty firm red lines and firm cuts. So from your perspective, you know, how does this farm bill process end up? How do we find bipartisanship?
Yeah, I've said it before, but I think that if there's a legislator who can get something done in a difficult Congress or in a difficult situation, it's absolutely Senator Stabenow. But she has said many times that these farm bill negotiations need to occur in the art of the doable. And I think what that really means is that everybody has to come to the table. Everybody has to be willing to make those tough decisions and compromise on all of the different pieces of the farm bill. Not only are there the really big outstanding questions about funding, but there also needs to be general bipartisan agreement on the policy in order to get a farm bill done. I think it's a really good reminder to everyone that every single farm bill that has been passed to date has been a bipartisan bill. It's had a big coalition of stakeholders, and ultimately it's kept all of these different people on the same page in order to be able to pass something into law. I think it's also really important to remember that back in 2018, there were more than 500 organizations that supported a strong bipartisan bill in the Senate, and there were over 900 organizations that supported that final passage of a bill in 2018. So again, in order to get this done, it's going to take a lot of bipartisanship and it's going to take a lot of hard work to get there.
The nutrition title, like you mentioned, has become highly polarized. Where do you think a consensus can be reached that balances both Senator Stabenow's demands while increasing funding to the farm safety net that Republicans are requesting?
I think it's really important that to note that there are a lot of polarizing issues that come up in the Farm Bill process, but Congress can't single out one particular title. It is an entire bill of 12 different titles, and it's going to include tough decisions in every single space. So whether you're talking about agricultural production, conservation, nutrition, research, rural development issues, there's so much that goes into a really big farm bill, and you can't just pit one corner and isolate it in a big negotiation. The other really important thing to note is that it is a big, big picture, and you also have to look at overall funding across the entire bill. You also have to ensure that you have priorities from both sides of the aisle included in a bill, and you need to make sure that you're getting the support from on-committee members and off-committee members. So again, this is a big process. This isn't about a single issue. And let's also not forget, you have to have a bill that's going to actually get signed into law. And so the White House plays a really important role in the bigger compromise and in the bigger conversation as well, because we don't want to see the president veto a really good farm bill. So I would just say, again, there are a lot of different issues. There's a lot to compromise, but you have to look at the whole picture. You can't look at a single issue.
We'll be right back with the rest of our panel discussion right after this.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Spring floods, fall floods, there's extreme fires, extreme drought.
Our farm is more resilient through the use of cover crops. We have better drought stress tolerance.
When it all boils down to it, these USDA climate programs are good for Main Street America. All that increase, it's going back into the economy.
If you're smart farming, you're also climate smart farming.
Welcome back. Republicans have been strong advocates of increasing the commodity and crop insurance programs, which would require finding an additional $50 billion in funding. Joe says this funding is incredibly important for rural America, despite funding concerns.
What I will say is the investments made by Chairman Thompson in the Farm Safety Net are needed and meet the need that farmers face today. Now, since the last ag census, the U.S. has lost over 140,000 farms. And I think the writing's on the wall that if we do not make the necessary investments in the farm safety net today, it's likely the next ag census will reflect similar. Congress has a really difficult job in finding ways to pay for these investments. And at least at the Farm Bureau, what we're supporting, what we're telling Congress is what the needs are in the farmer and rancher communities. And it's Congress's job to figure out a way to pay for that. It is a difficult job and one that I do not envy.
With it being an election year, have you seen any additional pressure put on members or candidates to pass a farm bill? I mean, your travels through rural America speaking with farmers, are they putting pressure on their candidates and their elected officials to make progress?
Yeah, when talking to farmers and ranchers, I think they're tired of the games that Washington politicians are playing. You know, we're about 4 months away from an election, and we have 6 weeks of Congress being in session until the election. And the thought of waiting another year to get a farm bill done when those higher reference prices wouldn't kick in then until 2026 is just not something that they want to see. So the Farm Bureau is dedicated to getting a bipartisan bill done this year. And I think the last thing I'll say is it is important to remember we're dealing with people's lives here, their livelihoods and their businesses. And this isn't just a political game to them. This is their their heritage that they hope to pass on to their children. And so it is really important that we get a farm bill done this year.
And Katie, turning back to you, do you think a bill could get done during the lame duck session after the election cycle this year? And if not, what will it take to pass a bill in the next Congress if this Congress can't pass one?
Well, I think it's good to remember that this current farm bill expires at the end of this fiscal year on September 30th. So Congress has to take some kind of action on the farm bill if Congress wants to avoid permanent law taking effect in 2025. So I think that that is going to really create an opportunity, you know, whether it is an extension or it is a new farm bill. The really good news is that we're going to see some kind of progress on the bill. I think, you know, obviously so much of which direction it ends up going is going to depend upon the outcome of the election and whether or not those political dynamics shift enough to really make a big difference. I think it's really interesting because a lot of the priorities for both Democrats and Republicans aren't likely going to change. And so, you know, I think a part of this is going to be about the calculus of how much do those changes occur and what is inevitable and what would possibly, you know, stall future progress. I think if there's single party control of both the White House and Congress in really either direction, that would put a lot of pressure on folks to kind of start over and have either a more conservative or a more liberal starting point in a farm bill. But I'm a little bit more optimistic that if the political dynamics stay relatively the same, or if there is kind of a shift in, you know, perhaps both the House and the Senate flip, but you still have a divided Congress, I think that there's an opportunity to really focus on getting something done, getting it across the finish line, and having those bipartisan partners to get it done. I think the third scenario is if we have no idea what happens on election day, and if those outcomes are unclear, that could really force potentially a short-term extension until we have a better sense of what happens next. But I will just say, you know, it takes a lot of work to get a farm bill done, long days, a lot of determination. And so I think in any of these scenarios, we're going to see staff and offices continuing to draft legislation, get those Congressional Budget Office scores, and really have a good understanding of where their stakeholders are at to get a final product done. I think in the meantime, we just have to wait and see what happens with the election, and then we'll find out how everything shakes out.
Uncertainty is the one thing we can agree on right now, but Joe and Katie, thank you both so much for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers after this. But first, RJ Sikowski has more on food purchases from grocery stores in this week's Map It Out.
In 2023, Americans spent an average of $7,102 on food. 44.8% of that total was spent on groceries for home-cooked meals, according to the USDA Economic Research Service. This map shows what Americans spend on groceries and the average spending by state. Green indicates the highest expenditures. The state of Alaska leads the nation in grocery store food purchasing, averaging over $4,000 spent annually. Grocery store spending in 2023 varied significantly in other states. West Virginia residents spent the least at about $2,500 annually, represented by light brown on the map. Higher grocery expenditures were typically seen in northwestern and Mountain West states, including Washington, Colorado, Oregon, and Utah. Kansas stands as the median state, representing an average purchasing and spending patterns across the United States. For AgriPulse, I'm Jacob Zakowski.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon. The 4th of July holiday is on Thursday. Both the House and Senate will be in recess. The following week, AgriPulse will be hosting a webinar titled What Happens When Animal Diseases Cross Boundaries? Focus on what can be done to protect against avian flu and other animal diseases. You can register for free on our website. As always, stay tuned for the latest on this and more at agripulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is agripulse.com.